Electricity, a big idea that's inspired countless new ones. From powering the light bulb to virtually powering our entire lives. 30 years ago, State Street launched the Spider S&P 500 ETF, SPY. A big idea that inspired the world to invest differently. And still does. What can you do with SPY?
Before investing, consider the fund's investment objectives, risks, charges, and expenses. Visit SSGA.com for a prospectus containing this and other information. Read it carefully before investing. SPY is subject to risks similar to those of stocks. All ETFs are subject to risk, including possible loss of principal. Alps Distributors, Inc. Distributor.
I'm Scott Wapner, and you're listening to CNBC's Halftime Report, the podcast, the most profitable hour of the trading day. We record this live weekdays at 12 Eastern. Listen in.
Welcome to the Halftime Report. I'm Scott Wapner. Front and center this hour, the rally in stocks, the pullback in growth, at least some parts of growth. The investment committee on whether it is time to rotate in this fast-changing market. Joining me for the hour, Josh Brown, Liz Young, Jim Labenthal. We're at Post 9. We check the markets. We are green across the board. We've had a nice little turn here. Dow's good for 160. S&P hasn't closed above 5,200 in a month since April 9th. So we need to watch that, and we will over this next hour. There's the NASDAQ turning green as well. I say, Josh, it's two areas of tech doing two distinctly different things. Mm. I mean, you're getting buying on the dips that you've had in mega cap, and then you're getting selling in some of the more growthy, high beta type e-commerce-y names, Roblox, Shopify, Palantir, Datadog, Airbnb, Twilio, Match, Uber. All of those are down reasonably significantly, certainly at the top of that list since they reported earnings. But all of those mega cap stocks I mentioned are up week to date. Nvidia's flat.
So ask yourself the question, what's the difference between the growthy mid and large cap technology names that you just cited and the mega caps? Like, what's besides the size, what's the main difference? To me, the main difference is the mega caps represent stability, represent reliability, and have the ability to cut costs and get their way to better and better earnings each quarter. You cannot say the same, unfortunately, for Roblox and Shopify. That's a different driver of those stocks. That's the major difference. So look at the outlooks that are being reported for Q3 and second half of the year, and that gives you the answer to the riddle. Shopify is fine, but the outlook isn't as good as people thought it would be. Airbnb is fine. The outlook is not great, though. Not terrible. So let's zero in on Airbnb. They had a great quarter. Revenue was up 18% year over year. I think everybody would say that's pretty darn good. Nice earnings beat, too, 41 cents versus 24 cents expected. Here's the problem. When it came down to guidance, rather than the 12% that the street's consensus was expecting, they said things will be about like this. That's not good enough for what that stock price has done. That's why they lopped 10% off of it today. So you've seen that repeated in the $50 billion, $70 billion, $80 billion, $100 billion market cap companies. That's what this earnings season has been about. We've had a lot of enthusiasm for the stocks year to date, but the outlooks just aren't that great. Again, not calamitous,
no,
just not
you
great.
You make a good point, Liz. You know, Josh basically tells you how the bar for these kinds of stocks has just crept up and up and up, mm-hmm. right in line with what their stock prices have done from the bottom left to the upper right. Well, the bar's followed.
Right.
And if you haven't been able to meet the moment, you see what the results are from what we just showed you, where a Roblox is down, you know, today from their earnings, 21%, Shopify from theirs, almost 20%. And so on and so on.
Yeah. I mean, expectations were unreasonable. Coming out of 2023, expectations were unreasonable that growth would just continue to hit these really high numbers. And to Josh's point, it's not, these aren't bad numbers. We're not getting bad results, but guidance is in the driver's seat. And we're looking forward at, okay, I've got these stocks at these multiples. My expectation was X, and now I'm going to get X minus 5%. Suddenly, that's this big disappointment. And it shouldn't really be a disappointment. I think it's more rational than anything else. And if we could parse out how much of the rise in a lot of these stocks was due to actual fundamental reasons and how much of it was due to just valuation expansion, multiple mm-hmm. expansion, mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I think what they're giving back is the multiple expansion, not some kind of fundamental issue that's going on. And that's okay. That's a market getting back into line with where it's reasonable what we might pay for growth if we can get our growth expectations into a more reasonable place.
Also, Jim, you know, how much these stocks have gone up because of the AI halo effect. It's not just the ones that I just mentioned, because not all of them obviously play in that arena. But if you look at the back down to earth trades, if you want to call it that, from AI related stocks. So, you know, Cloudflare, let's just take that for example. It's up 34% since the October bottom. In the last month, it's down 23%. You know, ARM is up more than 100% since the October bottom. Last month's down 18%. AMD, 59% since the bottom. Well, past month, it's down 10.5%. I could go all the way down this list. There's 20 stocks in front of me here, all with similar chart patterns. Way up since the bottom, pulling back over the past month as the halo wears a little thin, I think, as it relates to these AI stocks.
I do think the halo wears a little thin. I mean, I think we'll also admit, Scott, that even with the pullback, those are some pretty breathtaking returns that we've seen. I mean, the word that we've spoken about, all of us so far, are expectations, and have expectations crept up too far? I think they have for these growth stocks, but, you know, the perspective here, I mean, let's use the ultimate bellwether of NVIDIA, whether it's year to date or the last 2 years, it's been phenomenal. And I think what happens is people expect that sort of return from all these other stocks. They've them up a little bit, and the problem with it, and I just said, you know, these returns even after the pullbacks are really quite good, but the problem with chasing all these stocks is you lose sight of the fact that outside of technology, there's a lot of areas of this economy and the stock market that are actually doing really well right now. My point is not to say go sell all your growth stocks. That's not the point. My point is to say you can look further afield, folks, for good returns.
Well, of course, but, you know, Josh, can you look further afield for reliable returns, not just for of the moment returns? Like, I'll give you utilities and staples, but they both hit 52-week highs again today. All right, that's fine. Are those reliable? Are we asked at the very top, is it time to rotate within what is a fast moving market?
So I want to repeat something that I've said on the show many times, because I think it's really apt at this moment. You have to know what you are. When you're in the markets, you have. Am I an investor? Am I a trader? If I am a trader, am I a momentum player, or am I something else? There are a lot of different ways to do this. If you're a momentum trader, you're in the utilities right now, not because of an earnings outlook, but because these are the best stocks in the market of the moment. There was this really weird thing going on, started in April. All of a sudden, utilities caught fire as like an AI play. That's going to end in tears, by the way. But these stocks look incredible. 100% of the names in the XLU are now above their 50-day. Every single S&P utility is in its own bull market. It's been over 100% for 14 straight days. You can go back decades and not see a utility rally like this. How much longer do you think that's going to persist? If you're an investor, you're not like, oh yeah, let me get involved. If you're a momentum player, you have to be involved. It's where the money's being made. So if you don't know what you are, the stock market's a really expensive place to find out. So know what you are, what your time frame is, what you're trying to accomplish. For most people, they're looking for something that's a little bit more than momentum. And I would argue the Q's now become more favorable. So I told you 100% of the XLU names are in bull markets. Only 46% of NASDAQ 100 components, the triple Q components, are above their 50-day. Mm-hmm. Less than half. That, for me, as an investor, that means better setups. So again, if you know what you're trying to accomplish, it does a lot of the homework for you, and you know what you could ignore and what you could pay attention to.
So let's say this, like 6 weeks ago, you were, you know, out loudly on this program, Closing Bell, saying, look, I'm worried about NASDAQ stocks. I think that the Qs are vulnerable for a big pullback, which happened.
That's
now
right.
Now, to your point, they had the pullback. Maybe now they're more attractive. Strategus today says it's hard to fade the Mag 7 just yet. Why? Biggest thing to keep in mind, one firm's, I love the way they put this, one firm's CapEx is another firm's revenue. The more these companies invest in AI, the more it fuels the need for chips, cloud storage, data centers, electricity, et cetera. It's a contributing reason as to why it's so hard to fade.
Scott, I have said many brilliant things on the show year to date. that's one of them. But here's another. We talk about market-wide rotations. I was making the point the other day that there have been rotations internally within the Mag 7. 7 this year, which is fascinating. Apple falls out of favor. All of a sudden, the stock market falls in love with Amazon again. Can we pop a chart on AMZN? This is an all-time high as we speak. I'm issuing an alert here. If people don't understand, this is the new Apple. This is the name that now everyone all of a sudden finds themselves chasing and wondering why they don't own enough of. I love that. I don't want all 7 of these stocks going up together and going down together. This is better. It's healthier. It's more rational and it's more meaningful. Why is Amazon doing what it's doing right now? They have all of the tailwinds. They have the AI platform. They have the e-commerce that's firing on all cylinders. They have the cost-cutting story. They have it all. That's why this stock is working and others in the Mag 7 aren't.
Now, you have a bit of a comeback, though, in Apple at 183.55.
Yeah, it's fine.
So it's had a nice comeback. J.P. Morgan's retail trader radar, something they put out within the Mag 7, people, retail traders, were selling NVIDIA, taking some profits, doing a Druckenmiller, and buying Apple. Mm. So, you know, Liz, they've looked at the laggards, and there's been, as Josh says, a bit of a rotation within the Mag 7 too.
Mm-hmm. Well, one of the things that, and I don't really know the answer to this on a specific stock basis, but one of the things that I feel like has started to happen is that the AI trade became kind of a zero-sum game. You've got one company that'll come out and say, we're going to spend a ton to get further ahead on AI. They get maybe punished for the spending, and then who's the beneficiary of that spending? They get rewarded. Instead of what had been happening for the better part of the last 6 to 12 months, where you just say the word AI and the stock gets rewarded, now people are being more choosy about what in AI are you spending on? Do you have enough money to spend on that? And if you are spending, who gets that spending? I think investors are getting exhausted with all of the spending and are going to start to reward stocks much more for cost cutting and being more judicious with just laying it out based
on. Can I tack something onto that really quickly?
Yeah.
That's such a great point. And one of the things happening with Amazon specifically, I think this month they announced AWS has now crossed above a $100 billion annual run rate business. If it were a standalone company, it would be S&P 50, in my opinion. I think that's where the valuation would put it. That's buried within Amazon. It's a lot of the company's overall growth. But understand, the spending, the way that AWS has set itself up in AI, bedrock AI, it is LLM agnostic. Bring us whatever AI tools you want, you can run them on AWS. I think that that's the right approach. I don't agree with the approach of bidding up the company that has the most invested in ChatGPT, for example, because ChatGPT may not be the thing that people are talking about in 6 months. So I like the platform play, and I think that's another reason why we're seeing Amazon break out to new all-time
highs. It's up 9%. Month to date, as we said, it hit a record high. Apple got tired of being at the bottom of the list as it relates to mega cap performance. It's up 7.5% month to date. One of our committee members thinks it's got more to go. Kevin Simpson, he joins us now. You wrote some calls on Apple, and what's interesting to me is you did it following the news from the Berkshire meeting that they lightened up their position, and they, you know, as they alluded to, for tax purposes, apparently. But talk to me about this one first, writing more calls on Apple, the May 195s.
Yeah, I think, Scott, that was just a timely coincidence because of what happened with the Berkshire meeting and the announcement coming out of there. But we looked at this stock. Remember, we were purchasing it at 164 2 weeks ago. Here we have an opportunity to harvest some of that volatility post-Berkshire Hathaway. We're writing a covered call that gives us participation up to 195. And we're getting about a 5% annualized premium to do that. So it gives us a little bit of a hedge to the downside. And if the stock continues to move higher and we get called away, well, gosh, I wouldn't lose any sleep selling that stock at 195 in 2 weeks.
Yeah. You think it's on an upward trajectory from here? Like there's been a legitimate recovery? Because the technicals looked horrific.
Yeah, but I mean, I think we've experienced that technical recovery. You know, coming from 164 to 184 in a short period of time is a lot for a stock like Apple. So this is a period in which we might see some consolidation as far as the chart is concerned. But yeah, I definitely think that at these levels, it's still a buy. We have the developers conference coming out. I think it's going to be exciting for them to say AI. To Liz's point, it's probably not going to spark the world on fire, But Apple's a stock that we believe in long term. We certainly want to own it. And we think we're getting in at 160s and 170s was the right move. And I would encourage anyone that does own it to consider writing calls against it at these levels. There's nice premium here.
Yeah. You sold Broadcom. Sort of, I don't know, plays into our story a bit off the top about, you know, what some of these AI-related stocks have done. This one has surged, you know, over the past month. It's down a little bit. Take me behind the curtain on that one.
I mean, listening to you guys talk about it was exactly like listening to us discuss it in the room. We have a stock, we rotated out of Apple in November, bought Broadcom. Broadcom went up 50%, which was fantastic. Apple went down 15. Now we're taking the profits in Broadcom, rotating back into Apple from an active management standpoint. We just think that Broadcom is fully valued here. Their growth has been slowing. They still have growth, don't get me wrong. But if we look at the way that the stock is trading, and you determine a multiple on sales with this one, at least the way we're looking at it, and it's trading at around 15 times sales. For the previous 10 years, Scott, it's traded around 7x. Now, that's fine that you can have an appreciation, a premium, a new world order under AI, but at our methodology, we're saying, well, what if it just went 10 times sales? And what if we looked at the last quarter, gave it a 20% premium, and you're bringing in $130 a share? You're looking at a $1,300 pretty fairly valued stock here. So we really like the company. We just think that there's going to be some time before it can get to the next level where sales growth can catch up to the share price.
Yeah.
So we like the stock. We just don't like where it's trading.
Yeah. No, I hear you. May 22nd is going to be an interesting day for the whole universe, right, when NVIDIA reports. And, you know, we've seen some of these stocks get a boost on the back of NVIDIA before. I guess we'll see. Kev, thanks. I appreciate that. Kevin Simpson, Capital Wealth Planning. Interesting, guys, as we sort of move towards this rotation conversation, SocGen today says they prefer financials and industrials. They see the scope for the S&P going higher to 5,500 by the end of the year, and maybe that's where you're going to get some of the carry. Financials, industrials are going to take you there. You talked yesterday on Closing Bell with me about industrials, quote unquote, taking the wheel.
Well, they have. So I don't know that that will continue for the entirety of the year. If it happened, I don't think anyone would be upset about it. But if you and here's the most interesting thing about industrials. When you talk about financials, most of those companies more or less do the same thing. When you talk about healthcare, they're all in the business of you know, roughly the same thing. Industrials is so wildly varied. You've got home builders in there, and then you've got companies that make airplane parts, and then you've got companies that are very heavily involved in manufacturing, and then you've got the transports. So it's a really interesting group, and I think when you see industrials moving in concert the way that they have been, it's probably more of a economic signal than you could say for any other stock group or any other of the 11 sectors. So I think the message there is the industrials like it when companies all over the world are spending and building new things and Jim's onshoring theme, et cetera. And that's what's playing out in that group. So it's a very fertile space to look for winners, stocks that are in uptrends. And I like the call. I hope it'll be right. And maybe I'm not long enough there.
Jimmy?
Well, just going back to where we were a few minutes ago, it's also about expectations. That was very well said, Josh. But the expectations for a lot of these sectors, like financials and industrials, has been low for a long time. Now, this year, those expectations have started to creep up. But still, particularly if you look at financials, you're looking at a lot of companies that are trading around 10 times earnings, maybe a little bit of premium over book, most of them, at least in the financials, below book value, nice dividend yields. And again, not taking anything away from growth, but when expectations are as low as they are in some of these value-oriented sectors, it's easy to get a pop in the share prices when those low expectations are easily exceeded.
Well, yields, Liz, coming down have helped the banks. The sector's up 2.25% on the week. Year to date, we're looking at about 10. But the yield complex and conversation has changed multiple times already in the short period of 2024.
Yeah, I think it's difficult to make a play on financials just based on the yield environment, given how much volatility is still there. Obviously, if short-term yields stay high, their costs on deposits go up. I think a lot of the enthusiasm around financials has been a lot more about M&A activity, capital markets activity, the resurgence of some of the IPOs, and there's been an outlook that's improved given some of that heightened activity or new activity that we had been without for a while.
Let's finish this block on small caps, because in the conversation about rotating and what's going to take you higher, there, you know, yesterday there was a call that we could go to 5,700 on the S&P before the end of this year. I just read one from SocGen 55, whether small caps are a place to be. Renaissance Macro's Jeff DeGraff today talks about the prospects of new leadership there, calls it an interesting candidate. They've outperformed off the oversold low. He thinks there are several conditions present that could help push them through resistance versus large caps. I think we should discuss, Jim, you've added more to your small cap play of late. You've made a pretty big case for them on this show in the last week plus.
Yeah.
Make of this call by DeGraff.
Look, I think it's right, and I have made a big case. I want to just elucidate it a little bit more here, that the thing that people say against small caps most often is the high interest rate environment. But I think when they say that, it's kind of like a trite phrase that they don't really think about what they're saying. Interest expense is not a very large expense for small caps. The issue with higher interest rates is the extent to which it craters the economy.
Yeah, I think that's more where people lean. It's like, look, as long as rates remain higher for longer, the chances of an economic slowdown, if not breakage, goes up. Therefore, the prospects for good returns from small caps goes down.
That's exactly right, Scott. So it's a top line issue. And by the way, I'm not throwing out the idea that we won't have a recession this year. I mean, we could. It could happen. I will say Atlanta Fed GDP 4.2% right now. Who knows? Right now, the economy looks pretty good. And my point is, at 14 times forward earnings, you've still got a little bit of cushion here. I know there's been a lot of fits and starts in this space, but I do think that the economy is strong enough that top line should hang in there. And this should be the place to be.
Josh, I mean, DeGraff's been good on the timing of, a lot of looking at these technical factors and deciding what was going to work and when. It remains to be seen whether there's staying power in the small caps. The Russell's up almost 1.5% week to date because, the yields have stabilized. What do you think?
Yeah, I was actually with Jeff last week drinking margaritas the day before Cinco de Mayo. So Jeff's very early to everything. And Jeff was early to this. And not only early to this, but one of the things that Jeff is looking for in his technical work is areas like the huge rally we've seen in China this year. He's looking for areas where there's really no one left to sell. And you just get these extremes in negative alpha. You've got a sector that's had so much volatility and such little return that it's completely washed out. And small caps maybe as a whole don't totally fit in there, but they've got to be pretty darn close. This has been a horrendous asset class for probably most of the last 15 years. It's had these kind of 6 and 7 week tactical rallies, usually from very oversold conditions, but I don't like it for anything more than that. It's a one-night stand. It's not a long-term relationship. Think about the main issue with this asset class. It's not interest rates. It's not the economy. It's the fact that the best companies in the index get promoted and leave. They graduate. So over time, the small caps are actually some of the worst companies. Now, are there hidden gems? Are there individual opportunities? Of course they are. If you're not good at that, you probably shouldn't be working too hard at trying to find them. Right. So that's my overarching take here small caps.
So we'll take a quick break. When we come back, boy, we have two big trade alerts for you. Josh just added a new media name to his portfolio, and you're going to want to hear which one it is. Jim, by the way, doubling down on one of his big positions. We're going to go through them both. We'll do it after the break. The S&P currently hanging on to 5,200, a little bit above that, and hasn't closed above that level in a month. Back in two.
Electricity, a big idea that's inspired countless new ones, from powering the light bulb to virtually powering our entire lives. 30 years ago, State Street launched the Spider S&P 500 ETF, SPY, a big idea that inspired the world to invest differently, and still does. What can you do with SPY?
Before investing, consider the fund's investment objectives, risks, charges, and expenses. Visit SSGA.com for a prospectus containing this and other information. Read it carefully before investing. SPY is subject to risks similar to those of stocks. All ETFs are subject to risk, including possible loss of principal. Alps Distributors, Inc. Distributor.
B2B selling is tougher than ever, and we feel your pain. If you're struggling to close deals, consider giving LinkedIn Sales Navigator a shot. This sales intelligence platform helps professionals like you engage high-value customers, drive higher revenue, and increase sales performance. Sales Navigator also guides you in targeting the right buyers, highlights key signals such as job changes or which accounts you should prioritize, and uncovers hidden hot prospects so you can find those buyers that are most likely to convert. Fueled by LinkedIn's 1 billion member platform, Sales Navigator gives you the most up-to-date first-party data, enabling you to unlock conversations with the people that matter. Right now, you can try LinkedIn Sales Navigator and get a 60-day free trial at linkedin.com/halftimereport. That is linkedin.com/halftimereport for a 60-day free trial. Let LinkedIn Sales Navigator help you sell like a superstar today. Just go to linkedin.com/halftimereport and get started.
Okay, we are back, and we have some big committee moves to tell you about. We start with Josh Brown buying, as we said, a media name, one that's been beaten down, to say the least, WBD.
What have
Warner
I done?
Brothers Discovery.
This is probably a big mistake. I'm in here with a stop loss. This is not a table-pounding buy. Something about this situation tells me there's almost nobody left to sell. And I kind of like those types of situations. So here are the risks. Company has $43 billion in debt. It's unclear how they're going to ever completely delever. I don't think they need to. I think if they can continue to cut that down at the rate they have been, I think the number was $53 billion in debt not long ago. So if they can continue to cut that down, there could be a re-rating here. The other main risk, which I think is going to play out in the next month or so, they are deep in negotiations with the NBA about retaining that relationship, obviously for TNT, super important. They may fail. There are other players offering huge money, like the parent company of this network, and they may not be able to meet the number. I don't know what the reaction is on the street. I'm willing to tolerate that risk because I think what could go right here is really interesting. They brought James Gunn in to completely revamp the DC Comics cinematic universe. You're talking about properties like Superman, Batman, which are definitely under-earning relative to their potential. That's not a thing that might happen. That's already underway. Same kind of revamp for Lord of the Rings. Same kind of revamp for Harry Potter. These are massive Disney-sized properties that they have just been under-earning on at the box office for a very long time. Number two, direct-to-consumer is getting better, not worse, if you exclude the problem that we all know of with the linear network. That's not going to get better, but that's getting worse at a slower pace. Now they're making money, though, on the streaming platform, and that's going to start to become more important. They made $50 million last quarter, $90 million this quarter. It's 100 million users on the Max app. They are now one of the largest apps, and yesterday they announced a partnership with with Disney Plus Hulu that I think could be a precursor to much better activity with bundles, much more industry cooperation, and those to me seem like more powerful catalysts than what could go wrong. Okay. So I think we're at a place where the reward outweighs the risk.
Let me ask you this. Does the outcome of the NBA rights negotiation have anything to do with how long you may stay in the stock? Do you want there to be an outcome as a shareholder of this company? Do you want them to spend whatever it takes, or do you want them not to because of the heavy debt load that you already suggested, but said it exists on the balance sheet, which I'm just saying is well known
I'm glad you asked that question. I've been thinking about exactly that for the last week or two as I've been stalking this stock. One of the things that's interesting is that today they announced they're going to tender for $1.75 billion worth of debt. I don't think that they would be doing that if they weren't confident enough in the cash flow outlook, because they've got about $3 billion in change in cash on hand. So I think they're confident enough in what the cash flows are going to be that they can play with the big dogs. They can put up a $2 billion number, for example, for the rights to NBA. They've had a relationship with basketball for 40 years. Think about that. They have the best show inside the NBA, like the best coverage of basketball across all of the networks. I think they're going to fight like hell to keep it. I could be wrong about that. And I think if they can keep it, the stock goes higher. If they lose it, I think there's a negative reaction, but I think I get stopped out. I just hope they don't announce it prior to the open. I hope I have an opportunity to get stopped out before there's a big gap down. So this is not a table pounding buy.
Right.
The faint of heart should not follow me into this. Stocks are on 52-week low lists for a reason. This one is down there for a reason. I'm just feeling better about what could go right. Everybody understands the negatives.
Right. You're looking for a Brunson bounce.
You gonna back me up on this one, or you're trembling?
Yeah.
This guy has PTSD from this sector.
I'm just over here twitching. You have no idea.
You bought more
how
Disney.
Much I want you to be.
It's the JCPenney of streamers.
Oh, don't.
I don't know what could go wrong.
Come
here.
On. I thought we had a conversation before the show.
Just kidding.
I like that one. You bought more Disney. That's your headline.
Yeah. I bought more Disney. Going into the earnings, I said what I'm looking for first and foremost is streaming. I understand everybody was a little disappointed with the theme parks. That will come and go. That's not something to worry about. It's not like people don't want to go to Disney World anymore. But streaming is the future of this business. Josh, you mentioned how linear is not coming back. It ain't coming back. And where it's going is to streaming. They're still on track for profitability. And by the way, when you look at 2025 and an earnings multiple about 19 times, that could be lower if streaming continues to do better than expected.
You know what's funny about the linear business? We all know it's not going to go back to what it was, and that's fine. I think that's priced into all these names. What's interesting about it is it can coexist with streaming for like another 15 years. That's A. And B, if there's an overall recovery in ad spending, that might be good enough to mask the fact that linear is losing share. Like, they might have growing revenues but lose overall market share, and the street might be okay with that as the streaming platforms become more profitable with their own ad and ad light versions.
I like what you just said, but I'm going to add to it. How about even if that doesn't happen, that streaming, people keep thinking this is the newspaper industry of the 1990s. Internet comes along and kills the business. No, yes, linear has a problem right now. It's getting replaced by the benefits of streaming. It's not the newspaper business.
All right, let's get the headlines now with Bertha Coombs. Hi, Bertha.
Hi. The prosecution has started its redirect of Stormy Daniels in the Donald Trump hush money trial. Earlier, the defense repeatedly questioned the adult film star during cross-examination about profiting from her allegations. Daniels stuck to her story, saying she wasn't motivated by money. When the defense noted she sold merchandise online, Daniels replied, "Not unlike Mr. Trump." 56 scanners able to detect fentanyl will now be installed at the U.S.-Mexico border. Congress approved $200 million in funding after NBC News reported the scanners were gathering dust in warehouses because there wasn't any money to install them. The scanners are scheduled to be put in over the next 2 years. And Donald Trump's youngest son, Barron, will represent Florida at the Republican National Convention in July, in the 18-year-old's highest profile political role yet. NBC News first reported the youngest Trump, who is set to graduate from high school next week, will join his stepbrothers, Eric and Don Jr., and stepsister Tiffany as an at-large delegate. I guess it's all in the family now. Scott, back to you.
All right, Bertha, thank you. Bertha Coombs coming up. We'll have much more on the big move lower today in shares of Roblox. That stock tumbling on its guidance, down 20%. You might remember Bryn Talkington. She owns it, which means she's calling in with her reaction next.
Electricity, a big idea that's inspired countless new ones, from powering the light bulb to virtually powering our entire lives. 30 years ago, State Street launched the Spider S&P 500 ETF, SPY, a big idea that inspired the world to invest differently, and still does. What can you do with SPY?
Before investing, consider the fund's investment objectives, risks, charges, and expenses. Visit SSGA.com for a prospectus containing this and other information. Read it carefully before investing. SPY is subject to risks similar to those of stocks. All ETFs are subject to risk, including possible loss of principal. Alps Distributors, Inc. Distributor.
All right, our chart of the day is Roblox. Those shares are tanking after the company cut its annual bookings forecast. Bryn Talkington, she owns it. She joins us now on the phone. So what's your take, and what, if anything, are you doing with the stock today, Bryn?
Yeah, thanks, Scott. Well, first of all, the stock is trading down like a Snapchat quarter, right? It's just, you know, brutal. And we've already seen a slight recovery since the market opened. I think from a trading perspective, you know, my rule of thumb, I think, is a general rule of thumb. When you get a big pull down like this, you really want to wait till day three. You're probably going to make a sell-off today, maybe sell through Friday. The sellers will be out, and then Monday will be the time, which I will be adding. I definitely think there was an overreaction. The reaction should have been negative, by the way, because they did come in and say verbatim, we're going to make the difficult internal decision to adjust booking guidance. And so they were somewhat dramatic about that, even though they said for 2025 through 2027, they're still expecting bookings of 20%, which is what the street was wanting.
I don't want what you just said to get buried within this. You just said you're going to be adding to the stock, you think, on Monday?
Yes. I mean, when you read the numbers and listen to the excitement, I mean, so they had daily active users up 17% to 77 million. Bookings went year over year at 19%, not that key 20. And revenue growth was 22%. I think that's something that investors should also pay attention is that this company has really started having operating leverage, and they mentioned it multiple times. Free cash flow went from 82 million last year to 191 million. And so they're being smart about CapEx. They mentioned this operating leverage, and they're also having just the beginning of huge growth in India. They already have good growth in Japan. And so I think this is an overreaction. And what we're seeing in this type of market, that will be a good entry point over the next few quarters.
Okay. Josh, you have some history here. You sold this roughly 2 years ago.
Yeah,
not up much since then.
This was atrocious for me. I think the thing about Roblox that's so attractive is what a hold they have on that generation. And the amount of spending that takes place on that platform is very real. I think the difficulty here, why I lost money on it and why Bryn is suffering with it today, it's just very lumpy. It's very unpredictable. It hasn't been a public company for 10 years. We don't really have a sense of when they pull lever A, we get result B. It's just not that simple to figure out quarter to quarter. So I think if you're going to be here, you almost have to decide I'm going to be a long-term investor, because I think the monetization of the platform is going to outgrow this lumpiness that seems to impact every earnings quarter. I think Bryn would probably agree with that.
Bryn, last point to you.
Yeah, I mean, I think Josh is spot on. You know, this is not a Microsoft or an Apple, but I think the stickiness of the platform and these daily active users continuing to grow, the global expansion is real, by the way. And so I think look through the quarter, take advantage of the opportunity. I think a two handle or low three handle is a great entry point.
Okay. We'll see how the rest of this day finishes out. And let us know when actually you do buy more shares, if you would. And thank you very much for calling in and talking about this stock today. Tough one, obviously down about 20%. Bryn Talkington, thank you.
Thanks.
Let's do our calls of the day. Josh, back to you. Live Nation got upgraded today to a buy from neutral at Redburn Atlantic. Price target to 115. This is a dollar move higher. Obviously, breakup concerns are overblown. That's what they suggest.
Yeah, I do not think that what's happening now from a regulatory perspective is going to result in a breakup. I'm sure there'll be some expenditure. I'm sure it'll be annoying. I'm sure there'll be some grandstanding at some point. But in the end, this is a very unique asset. I think this is a business that's got secular growth ahead of it as far as the eye can see. Live entertainment is one of the last things that the consumer is willing to compromise on or give up on. We know that through recessions, through expansions. So I really love my investment here, and I'm not making any changes.
General Motors today, Jimmy, initiated, outperformed Bernstein. They say there's mojo in Motown again. Price target 55. They think the performance is going to continue to push that stock higher.
I feel very good about General Motors. The results that continue to come in from the company are very strong. And on the back of those results, you're seeing the analyst community get behind the stock. I'm just looking right now at free cash flow estimates for this year, Scott. And from the beginning of the year, those free cash flow estimates have gone up by 50%. These are sizable numbers, billions of dollars. And what they're doing with it is buying back shares, which means that the earnings per share growth is going to be even higher. Stock trades below 5x earnings. Makes no sense. 70% of book value. Makes no sense. Should trade at 7x earnings, which puts it around $65, maybe even $70 a share.
Josh, let's just button up Toast for this week, because we talked about it on the back of earnings. Stock was up big, I think it was yesterday. Price target today goes to 21 at Mizuho. That's following those earnings results, though they do rate it neutral. They talk about higher profitability outlook, quarter not without some hiccups. How should our viewers look at this over the next, you know, handful of months, let's say?
Yeah, so the analyst here is Dan Dolev, and he does not love the story. I think he's nodding to the fact that they are growing and there have been some improvements, but, you know, it's definitely not a story that doesn't have specific risks around it. I think one of the big risks on the stock has been proven wrong and will continue to be proven wrong, which is that they have like this endless amount of competition from the more mainstream billing payments companies. I just don't think that's the reality. hospitality, restaurants like the specialization here that Toast offers, and that's why they keep winning new locations. So now you have a stock trading very well. It's a 70 RSI, almost overbought, 16% above its 20-day moving average, 14% above the 50, 36% above its 200, might be slightly extended here, which I said yesterday. It's 100% off its low, and it's up 48% year to date. So if you missed it, if you're not in it right this minute, maybe you don't have to race into the stock. Maybe there'll be a better opportunity. But I'm here, and I'm long-term, so we'll see what happens.
Quick break. Straight ahead, we have several committee stocks on hot streaks. I'm going to tell you exactly which ones are on the run and what the committee members are doing with those names now. We'll do it next. Let's talk about some committee stocks that are on a hot streak, to say the least. Berkshire. Josh, 6 days in a row?
Yeah, look, what the Berkshire Hathaway annual event this weekend did so successfully was it really showed you a future where Greg Abel, Todd and Ted, like this next generation, Ajit Jain, are ready, willing, and able to continue the work that had been done by Buffett and Munger all these years. And that was the most important thing they had to accomplish. I think they landed the plane beautifully.
PG&E, Jimmy, 6 days in a row for that one, too.
Yeah, and, you know, this is a utility stock, so this is not something I'm looking to, you know, knock the lights out with, but it's just a solidly run company. There should be grid demand picking up, whether it's electric vehicles or data centers. Exquisitely well run, good valuation, doing a lot to suppress future wildfires. That's important, too.
5 days in a row for RIG.
Yeah.
Transocean.
Well, part of that is because it got knocked down. You may remember this, Scott, last week after earnings, which I said at the time was kind of ridiculous. So it's gained all of that back. The stock right now is fairly valued unless and until you bring off the cold stacked idled rigs, which is going to happen sometime in the next 12 months. That's a call option. When it happens, the stock is going to pop. I think there will be some anticipation of that. The CEO was talking that by the end of the year, the industry will be calling on cold stacked rigs. I think you want to get in the stock now for that.
Okay, other moves. Visa 5 days, Vertex 4 days, so we'll keep our eye there too. Up next, Big Pharma's big hire. What Pfizer just did that has shareholder Josh Brown even more bullish on that stock now. He'll explain next. We are back. Pfizer making a big move within its ranks that caught Josh's attention. He's been writing about it. So they hired a sell-side analyst, okay?
That's crazy,
right? What I think the most interesting part of this, though, is they didn't go out and find the most bullish person on their stock.
No.
In fact, they did the opposite. The person is Andrew Baum, okay? He has not had a buy rating on the shares for over a decade, this according to Barron's. He pulled his price target down steadily as the stock has come down over the last couple of years, and they hired him anyway. Why do you like this move? Why did they catch your attention?
I just feel like that's so gangster. If you look at like how poorly this stock has performed relative to its peer group, like you think about the Lillys and the AbbVies of the world, and then you look at this and you just say like, all right, Albert Bourla is probably a great leader, but might have a blind spot. Doesn't understand what the street wants to see, doesn't necessarily understand what institutional investors want to see. So who better than to have come in-house than somebody who has been saying these things publicly for a decade, do this, don't do that, et cetera, et cetera. So if you actually look at what the company said about this hire, Dr. Baum will chair Pfizer's portfolio management team. That's the firm's governing body responsible for capital deployment and portfolio management. So they're going to decide what programs to cut, what programs to accelerate, expand, who to partner up with, what fields they should prioritize when they're looking at how they're going to invest. This stuff is critical, and I think it's really interesting that they brought someone in from Wall Street. We've seen this elsewhere. We saw Google hire Ruth Porat, and she's going to basically be running the show there now. So this has happened before. Mm-hmm. I think it's a really interesting development as a shareholder of Pfizer. I like it. I think it's a great move.
And not a, you know, tell you what you want to hear kind of a hire either, which is just an interesting managerial perspective, I think, on the whole thing.
I don't want to undersell him, by the way. This guy wrote a legendary report in 2011 about immunotherapies that ended up becoming a huge milestone for the pharmaceutical industry. Dr. Baum is a very experienced, he's more than just a sell-side analyst.
All right, quick break, final trades on the other side. All right, 3 o'clock Eastern, we're going to see if we can get that first close for the S&P above 5,200 in a month. We'll track that. Erin Brown, PIMCO, is going to be with us, and she's going to exclusively give us her new asset allocation look. So you don't want to miss that. Kristen Bitterly with me as well. Let's do final trades. Farmer, Jim.
Delta Airlines just hit a post-pandemic high.
Thank you, Liz Young.
S&P low vol, good sector representation in their staples, financials, and industrials.
JB.
Live Nation, big summer.
All right, I'll see you at 3.
You've been listening to CNBC's Halftime Report, the podcast. You can always catch us live weekdays at 12 Eastern, only on CNBC.
All opinions expressed by the Halftime Report participants are solely their opinions and do not reflect the opinions of CNBC, NBC Universal, their parent company, or affiliates, and may have been previously disseminated by them on television, radio, internet, or another medium. You should not treat any opinion expressed on this podcast as a specific inducement to make a particular investment or follow a particular strategy, but only as an expression of an opinion. Such opinions are based upon information the Halftime Report participants consider reliable, but neither CNBC nor its affiliates and or subsidiaries warrant its completeness or accuracy, and it should not be relied upon as such. To view the full Halftime Report disclaimer, please visit cnbc.com/halftime-report-disclaimer.
This podcast is supported by FedEx. Dear small and medium businesses, no one wants happy customers more than you do. So you need a business partner just like you. Like FedEx, who understands your passion for serving your customers because they have the same commitment towards you. That's why FedEx offers you picture proof of delivery, packageless and paperless returns, as well as weekend home delivery to 98% of the U.S. on Saturday and 50% on Sunday. See the FedEx service guide for delivery information. What's more, FedEx Ground is faster to more locations than UPS Ground. Trust FedEx for timely deliveries. See what FedEx can do for your business. Absolutely, positively FedEx.